and welcome to episode 249 of the Awesome Comics Podcast.
Get close.
The place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. We're almost at 250, and as always, I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the upcoming Indigo Park, amongst other things. And joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan the Man Butcher.
Hello.
And the 1987 East Anglian yo-yo champion, Tony Esmond.
Hello. Someone drew me with a paper bag on and a picture of balls on it this week, which I was quite blown
away. Pete. Pete fucking knocked it out of the park. He did a ton of portraits.
Oh, my God, so good. Out of the blue did that come.
Yeah.
There were some great ones in there. I remember scrolling through, because I didn't put a picture in to do it, and I remember scrolling through and getting all the way to the bottom and thinking, oh, you wanker, and like laughing my head off at the picture he did of me. It's good.
Yeah. For those who don't know, we had a portrait competition. Well, not competition. It was sort of like just a bit of fun, wasn't it? A thread on our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. And one Mr. Pete Davies missed out on it. So he's decided to draw everyone who actually took part. So thank you very much, Pete. They are awesome.
Yeah.
And it's good to see a lot of people like using their pictures as their avatars for social media and stuff.
Yeah.
As well.
So.
I'd use it as mine, but I've got relatives who are friends of mine on Facebook. You know what I mean? I've got an aunt who's about 80 for some reason on Facebook.
So you, you with a paper bag and a pair of bollocks on your head is...
fuck it.
Usual Christmas fare. Yeah.
She knows what I'm like.
Yeah exactly. yes, welcome to the show, folks. It's been another... interesting week in the world of comics, but we are here to entertain, and we've got a brilliant interview coming up with one Dan Cornwell. An awesome pod fave and artist of Rock of the Reds and Rock the God. We just finished having a great chat with him. So yeah, and Judge Dredd. Yeah, there's all loads of it. So all you 2000 AD fans out there, you've got.
I want to read that story now. He talks about.
He hinted at.
But you'll find out about that soon enough. But we just need more comics in our lives, don't we, at the moment?
Yeah,
we just need more fun and more comics. And do you know where you can get more comics?
You can get them at Comic House.
Yes, our sponsor. Who?
It must have been a really bad ad last week, because Pete thanked us for it. And normally that just means...
that's a sign, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Pete and the Comic House gang are fighting the good fight in the name of comics. And... there's more comics going, joining Comic House all the time. And why? Because it's awesome. And we love them.
Yep.
And more people are checking them out. The Comic House website itself has a huge database. People that self-publish, they can list their books on there for free and start selling like hard copies. But the app, we always need more people checking out indie comics. And this is an app focused on indie comics. And it's full of bloody brilliant ones. What sort of stuff have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Cognition Volume 1, Lizard Men 6.
Good.
Meanwhile, Issue 8, we're banging cover on that one. We've got The Adventures of Pup and Grumpycorn, Issue 1.
Gav Owen and
Emily Owen. Meanwhile's
got Strange Haven in it as well, isn't it?
I don't know.
Strange Haven is a sort of legendary small press comic from the 90s and early 2000s. It's got a little bit of a prisoner feel to it. By Gary Spencer Millage, I think his name is off the top of my head. I own a page of it, actually. I've got it framed in.
Nice.
It's a really interesting read. If you can put the trades up, this is a sort of continuation of it, which didn't spark as much for me. But Strange Haven's just, if we were a podcast in the late 90s, we'd be talking about it, if there was such a thing.
Can you imagine our hair as well?
That'd be good. Might be
like,
the same.
We'd probably look like Bross.
Might have been rocking some curtains.
Oh, yeah, man. Undercuts, curtains. I probably have some kind of like mullet.
Listen, we've seen pictures of you in the 90s.
Have you?
In your metal phase,
Dogs had some pictures, didn't he?
That would look. Oh, God. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, you know. Look at me now. Actually, don't look at me now because my hair desperately needs a good cut.
Look at me now, Mum.
Yeah.
Also, we've got Lad Issue 1, The Homecoming.
Yes.
Is the second issue on Kickstarter at the moment, I'm saying? Is that right?
Yes, Lad Issue 2 is on Kickstarter, and it's bloody brilliant. So, it's a quality book, and it's joining all the other quality books on the Comic House app, which is amazing. There's a 14-day free trial if you want to find out more. Is that offer still available at the moment, Dan?
I believe so. It's code stay safe.
Yeah. Stay safe. And you get another month, I believe, is that the...
Yeah, you get the 14 days and another month on top of that.
Yes, wow, pretty good.
Use the code stay safe and just read loads of comics. I mean, there's loads of brilliant stuff on there. If you go to comichouse.com, find out more.
You can sign up for free and leave loads of reviews for people as well. Do that.
Yeah. Yeah, because the creators have profiles and stuff like that, but no, seriously, if you are reading, I've actually left reviews. It's one of the only places I've left reviews.
I've left reviews
on the Comic House app.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's not I'm not one of these paragraph people. You know, when you go on Amazon and you just see this paragraph that is sometimes hilarious.
Yeah.
I just say, this was good.
I found a bit fluff in my belly button, and that was more interesting than this comic, that sort of thing.
You're the one that posted that about my work.
My fluff is very interesting. And there's a reading group as well. So there's a reading group for Comic House during this COVID lockdown, being run by Ian Loxham on our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. If you go there's a lovely picture of Ian in a lady's hat for his which I know he'll change.
Every picture of Ian's a lovely picture.
That's true. And this week is a comic out of Freak Town Comics called Deadly Burlesque, which I really must read. I had a quick look at it, and there's quite a lot of boobs in it. Mm. So there you go. What more recommendations?
Whatever jokes we may make aside, it's a great reading group. Loads of people reading new types of comics, and people are putting genuine, like, decent comments about it. It's not like...
Yeah, it's been like an intelligent discussion about the qualities of the book, which I really like.
Reading group.
Ian's picking lots of different types of books as well, so it's fantastic to see.
I've never seen that Deadly Burlesque on there before, so you can't see everything on there, can you? But it's drawn my attention.
Well,
so
you should see everything on there at comichouse.com.
And I have to say, if your book gets chosen as the reading book, it tends to go up in the charts as well, doesn't it?
Getting the top five at least.
The charts of which...
Piling on to read it.
Yeah, Rock of the Reds has been shooting up the charts recently, which is brilliant to see. Mm. And it was just a timing. We actually didn't get around to announcing the guest this week. And then we discovered that Rock of the Reds is more popular than ever. Rightfully so. Mm-hmm. So what brilliant timing to have our guest Dan Cornwall on the show. So enough of us just talking nonsense. Let's get to the good stuff. Okay, this week we're joined by an artist known for the likes of 2000 AD, pod favourite Rock of the Reds, and the upcoming Rock the God. It's Dan Cornwall. Hello, sir.
How you doing? Hello.
All right, Dan.
Good to be here. Good to have you on finally. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I have
heard a few of your episodes, and one of yours when you mentioned getting me on board, and I was looking forward to that.
We've met you at quite a few shows since discovering your work.
Yeah.
We sat next to Dan, I sat next to Dan in
Troops. Man.
Yeah, at True Believers. True Believers. You lived to tell the tale.
Blimey. Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the virus began.
Yeah, that's what they say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dan Rage Monkey Butcher.
Dan.
Actually, wasn't it? No, it wasn't Horse. The Cheltenham Gold Cup wasn't that weekend, was it?
No, it was.
Yeah.
It was early February.
Yeah. But yes, we've seen Dan at quite a few shows, and I'm actually us and our listeners are all big fans of your work. I'm staring at a print of Rock that I picked up when we met you at Lawgiver a couple of years ago. Do you remember that?
I remember that. It was when me and you went to it, wasn't it?
Yeah, really? Yeah. We snuck into Lawgiver.
Snuck in.
Yeah.
Is that another term for not paying?
Oh, we've got a press pass, my friend.
Yeah. Which is another term for not paying.
You did actually cover it though, didn't you?
Well, we did.
We did.
Yeah. Some interviews. Yeah.
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 I'll tell you what. It's only been how long has it been to this lockdown? A month? Three weeks?
Yeah. 3 weeks, I reckon. Yeah.
Right, and I didn't have any cons planned for these 3 weeks. And I've only done the one so far, which was the Cheltenham, True Believers. But the fact that all the others have been cancelled, it kind of makes you miss it even more.
Yeah, I've got a serious case of FOMO going on.
Yeah. However, on the other side of that coin... in terms of your work and work process, how has it affected that? Because obviously, like going to a convention, whether you've, you know, you've bought a table or you're a guest at a table, that's a working day that's kind of taken out of your hands for a lot of people, unless you do your page. Do you work on your pages at your convention tables?
No, I'm always in too much of a state before and then after, and it would show up in my work. But I plan the weeks leading up to it to make sure that I'm not.
Yeah,
I haven't got. I know a lot of writers and artists do. They take their, you know, whether it's laptops or whatever, pads with them to work on.
Yeah,
but my head's got to be in it 100% for it. You know, if I'm not 100% focused on it, then I don't think I'm giving the best I can. So
do you do commissions at the table, Dan? I can't remember.
Yeah. I take too long on them as well. You know, they're meant to be like 10, 20 minute con sketches, aren't they? And I spend about the amount of times people come up to my desk and ask for something, you know, whether it's Dread or Rock or Batman or something.
Yeah.
And I say, yeah, sure, come back in 20 minutes or so. And then they come back in 20 minutes and go, I'll make it another 20. And then they come back another 20. And it's generally about an hour and a half before they get their work, you know. I've had one guy, one guy walked away and goes, I can't stay, mate. I've got to go. I've got to get my train. I'm sorry about that. Here's your money back.
You do that as a thing, though. I feel bad because sometimes I'll go, you know, and you do a couple of rounds of the con, don't you? Come back and you see them still working on it and they look up at you and you sort of mouth, I'll come back in a bit. You know, there's a bit of that going on. That's quite common, though, dude. I don't think that's just you, man.
Yeah.
I think you just got to get them out. You just got to do it quicker. You know, I get too, I want it to be perfect and it's a con sketch. It's not a cover.
I mean, anyone who's seen your style, though, knows you leave nothing to chance. You know, you have detail on your pages, which is just fucking awesome. You never half-ass anything. So, and to be honest, those people who got a commission, I mean, it may take you a while, but they're going to be bloody pleased with that. So,
yeah. That's the main bit, is that they're happy with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I am. I remember I did one for at Leamington.
Oh, yeah.
And it was for... a lady, I'm pretty sure she wasn't a comic fan, but she was there, and she wanted a I can't remember what she called it, but she goes, it's a dog's body.
Right, here we go.
A little dog, as well. It wasn't a big dog. She goes, a small dog.
Yeah.
And I was like, right. And she goes with a woman's torso attached. You know, like a centaur, is it?
Centaur. Right. Yeah.
But it's instead of a horse and a human, it was a dog and a human.
Yeah.
And it was a bit bizarre.
Did you end up going home with her, or did something happen?
I mean, I guess if the money's there, you do not care. Or do you draw a line?
I didn't post it online because it's one of those, you know, normally I do.
Yeah.
I go, I'll look at something Batman, but I didn't even know what it was called, and I just thought it looked a bit weird, so I didn't bother.
Yeah. I remember hanging out with Vander at a convention, Brian Vander, our pal from Australia, and some geezer coming up to him and going, and Brian going to me, just looking up casually because he sort of saw him out of his peripheral vision and went, fuck me, not this geezer again. And the geezer came and he said, threw himself straight into it. Right, so he's a panda and she's tied up and he's milking her. Jesus. And Brian just went, no, mate, I've told you before. No. And that, and the geezer just sort of grins, wanders off, you know.
This isn't the convention for you, mate. You're at the wrong convention.
Later on, I saw Bill Sienkiewicz drawing a panda that was milking a woman. I don't know.
Christ.
He needs the money, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. That took him 4 years, that one, actually. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, well, commissions aside, I mean, we love your work. And obviously, like Rock of the Reds and stuff is quality, and like there's a lot of our listeners as well hugely looking forward to Rock the God, etc. But before that, to rewind, like what got you started? Because Rock of the Reds was probably everyone's first introduction to you. But like, what got you started in comics?
I read 2000 AD from a paper round. I started a paper round when I don't know how old you start, 12. And I was posting someone's paper, and inside it was a 2000. I'd read the paper as I'd going round, and obviously I then got into 2018 and I started reading it. I thought, this is amazing. And it was an issue when they had Bisley's and Pat Mills slain in it.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
And it, you know, as a 12-year-old, there's tits in it. There was axes and blood and gore and the works. And it blew my mind. Because before that I was... I think the comics I was reading before that were... is it Marvel UK Spider-Man? The reprint of Spider-Man. Yeah. And you've got to remember that... the Black Symbionite costume storyline.
Mm. Okay. Secret Wars.
The colours in that were... You know, the great artwork, but the colours were pretty basic colours. Whereas when you go from that to 2000 AD...
It was fully painted.
Yeah, fully painted artwork like that. And there's lots of other stories in it that blew my socks off at the time as well. But that's how I got started. And I just wanted to... when I saw that, that's what I wanted to do. I knew as soon as I saw it, that's what I wanted to do. I always drew beforehand anyway. It was 2000 that really made me realise this is what I wanted to do. I was always a kid in the class, I was always doing the drawing and the light.
So who, other than Bisley, was there anyone else you idolised as a kid or you wanted to copy
anyone who did the painted artwork at the time.
Right.
You know, I remember when Kev Walker did the ABC Warriors.
Oh, I love Kev Walker.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
And he'd done these, I think the name of the character was the Imperial Rottweilers or something.
Right.
In the ABC Warriors. And the way he painted them was incredible. And then, Greg Staples come along and...
Yeah.
All of those. But the funny thing is, the older you get, the more you appreciate the black and white artwork.
Yeah. I've gone back to read Ballardinelli. I love Ballardinelli, but it's just really appeals to me more now, I think, you know.
Mm. Yeah, that's the funny thing, isn't it? You get all these... I'm getting loads of the early Judge Dredd collections.
Yeah.
And the artwork in it is... There's so much more movement in black and white artwork, I find.
Like the Ron Smith stuff and stuff like that, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. And... the one I can't get enough of at the moment is Steve Diven.
Yeah.
I really can't get enough of his work at the moment. It's and that's one of those horrible things. I started as he passed away, unfortunately. So I'm never going to get the chance to meet the guy.
But okay.
His artwork is incredible.
He was, I was talking about someone about him the other day, and he's one of those guys. He does so much with a short amount of line work. You know, he can communicate a story so well with just an angle of a mouth or something like that. It's not like over-rendered, is it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I keep telling myself that, you know, less is more. Less is more. It does work. If you put too much... Some artists get away with putting loads in because that's their style. If I do it, it's because I'm covering up crap, basically. It's hiding the bad stuff, you know, just make it look pretty, then... whereas you'd like to say Steve Dillon's, it's clean, crisp.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not saying yours is not, man. I love your work. I think it's really
changing.
Yeah, yeah, it has a bit. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Because you're moving on to the new Rock the God. Are you adding more detail with that, or are you holding back a bit? Because that's quite a grand storyline. I'm sure we'll get into it.
It's some of my best work. I think visually it will look totally different to. I say that you can't really make too much of a difference when you're drawing football. right. You can't add too much to it. You know, you just got characters running around playing football, so that you can't really, you know, add too much detail in that because there's not much of a background, is there? You know, green grass, that's it. But other than that, it's for me. I'm just looking at it now. Actually, I've got it on my screen. I've just got the part or chapter 4 proof. Chapter 3, sorry. A letter of proof from Jim Campbell.
Nice.
So it's nice to see it all finished up before just the print, if you like. But the artwork in it, for me, you know, if I can say it, it's streets ahead of Rock of the Reds. But that was going to be a given because Rock of the Reds was my first professional work, which was...
Yeah.
I drew Rock of the Reds.
Should we rewind a bit to your first sort of non-pro work? So where were you first published? Was it in one of like Future Quake or something like that? Was it or?
It was quite funny actually. It was in Future Quake,
right?
And I didn't know I had been published. because I had changed.
I've had it with those guys. I love those guys, but they did. I did meet them at a convention. They went, "Oh, we did that story of yours." And I went, "Oh, brilliant! Excellent."
Yeah. Well, they probably did send me an email. Dave probably did send me an email, yeah, but I changed my email address.
Right.
And I went onto a new email, and I can't even remember how I found out. I think I might. I think I must have been on some. I might have been on the 2018 forum, and I must have saw it on there. And it, you know, this wasn't just as it's been released. This was 6-7 months down the line, I think.
Yeah,
and I was like,
I had that 2 years ago with them. I used to share an email with my missus. Never a good idea, I might add. And and she said, "You've had some weird email from someone called Bolt or something." And I went, "Oh, right." And so he said, "You remember that? That it was a message from him saying, you remember that script you sent me years ago? We're going to do that one. We fancy that one now." I went, "Oh, okay, thanks."
Yeah, it's a nice surprise, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it was nice. It really was nice. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was it. I saw that, and the strip I had done was actually what's it called? The Price. I think it was called The Price.
Okay.
With a guy called Derek Hamill.
Oh, okay.
And it was I drew it in black and white, and then I coloured it in colour, obviously. And they had printed it in black and white, and they had the only one colour page of it was the final page, which was coloured. The rest of it, I've obviously turned it, just changed the file to a grayscale file.
Yeah. What was that character?
It was a character that, to gain his powers, his superpowers, he would slaughter people, and he'd get his powers through slaughtering the more people he killed, and it got quite dark the younger they are, so he would go around killing children. So
okay. Nice little premise. Where was your original work? Well, it's about this child killer.
But that was the first one, and then when I found out I got it, I replied to a comment, I think, on this forum, 2080 forum, and then Bolt got hold of me and wanted me if I was interested in doing other scripts, which at that time I thought I hit the big time, obviously, because I hadn't had anything published. Mm. And then he sent me quite a few more scripts, and one of them was Wirehead Rex, which was like a Strontium Dog story. And that's the one that was in Dog Breath.
Yeah.
And if you're two issues of, no, it was in four issues of Dog Breath, because it was two parters.
Okay.
Four issues. And that's what John Wagner saw my work in.
Oh, right. That's where the connection was. Yeah.
This is the thing that, because obviously, like, Dog Breath and Future Quake. Was it Future Quake?
Future Quake, yeah.
And Zarjazz.
Yeah. And Zarjazz. I mean, they're essentially sort of a fanzine sort of comics, aren't they? They're taking the original IP, but then it's all fan service, isn't it?
They're kind of allowed to, aren't
they? They're allowed to do that. And I mean, a lot of people know of the name, but the amount of times that, you know, it isn't sort of like the fanzines that are just photocopied and they put some genuine thought into this. There is a proper following of it. And like you say, the likes of John Wagner, Alan Wagner, you know, I just flicking through and then seeing artists and stuff, it's never discount.
That was my first published work was in Dog Breath.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
What was your story, Tony?
It was a kind of pastiche on a Strontium Dog story where they had to catch this bloke who's going around killing people because they were stupid. so it's usual theme. And he kills someone called, I think I called him Larry Bolivar or something stupid like that. And he kills him in the bath. I got the original pages here. It worked quite well. Ed Trequino did the art. He's a good lad. Yeah. But that was before Bolt had it, because I think it was a doctor. What was her name? Dr. Smith or something. Her name was this lady who ran it originally, and then she sort of stopped, and Bolt took it on. I think
it's been going for years, though, isn't it?
It has. Oh yeah. I'm going to say 20 years.
Yeah, I was going to say it used to be black and white, and you know, like done on copy paper or something. But now they obviously send it off to you know, the printers and full colour covers and they're absolutely amazing guys. You know, anyone who asks me, you know, how to get into the industry, I always say to them, you know, if you want to get your work published, you've got to do sequential. It's all very well and good being able to do nice pin-ups,
But
you've got to be able to tell a story, And the only way you're going to do that is by drawing from scripts. And if you can't write a script yourself, which a lot of artists can't...
They're always looking for people, man, as well.
And you think there's quite a few people have come through. I think Gordon Rennie, didn't Gordon Rennie start off doing some... Got some stuff printed? Was it him? Quite a few, I think. Started off at Future Quake.
And obviously you as well. Because obviously, like John saw your stuff, but like, how did he just get in touch with you out of the blue? How did that come?
Totally out of the blue, and it was
that must have been surreal.
Yeah.
It was probably my wife's in the room next door. I was going to say it's the best day of my life, but I then kissed my wedding ring. because I had a job that I absolutely despised.
Are you a bus driver?
I was a bus driver in Brighton, and I couldn't stand it. I'm not really a people person, if you like.
Drivers
and driving, most bus drivers are like that, aren't they? I was driving whatever route I was driving, and my phone pinged, and I used to leave my phone in the binnacle of the bus with speedo is, and because it's big enough, you just drop it in there, face down, so you can read it. But I got to a traffic light. My phone pinged telling me there's a Facebook message. And when I got to a traffic light, I just leant over and just tipped it up. And it says, you've got a Facebook message from John Wagner. And
bloody hell. Just parked the bus up.
My
heart jumped, but then I just went, bollocks. You know, someone's hacked into his account, something's happened, or it could be John Wagner's, you know, been, you know, when you get people, these are, I'll pass it on messages, like a chain letter.
And
I thought I might be something like that, you know, I just thought it won't be anything of credit, if you like. And then when I got to my terminus, I opened it up and it was from John, and he basically says, he's very short and blunt. To the point, he just said, do you like football and can you draw it? And I said, fuck yeah.
Are you a football fan anyway at that point?
I was a football fan, yeah. I was a football fan. That's what I replied. I said, yeah, I can draw it. He goes, do you like football and can you draw it? I went, yeah, I can draw it and I'm a Man United fan, if that.
He's hopefully a
Man
United
fan. Yeah, and hopefully that doesn't make any difference to whatever you're going to ask me. And he said, no, he's a United fan as well, which is pure luck. I don't know if this would have happened if he was a Liverpool fan or something. He might never have, you know, got the job. But then he just said, oh, I've got your email off Dave Evans. And he goes, I'll send you an email. And he just basically offered me Rock of the Reds gig, which was outstanding. And you know, it's one of those moments that this is going to change everything. It was one of those moments because I was determined to make it work, whatever, you know. You don't get these breaks in life too often, so you've got to make the most of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. So you smashed it.
Yeah. did a lot of Rock of the Reds while you were still driving the bus, though, didn't you? Or
that still blows my mind.
How you steered the bus while you were drawing is
brilliant. We've seen that famous video of Lee from Life LinkedIn whilst driving, haven't we?
That's just mental.
I've got two knees. You do it with your knees, don't you? I got that trick off my old man. He used to roll a cigarette whilst driving the car. I used to think that was the coolest thing ever.
So you were, what were you just doing it in the evening? That must have been torturous, though, wasn't it?
I was lucky. I say lucky, I was a bus driver. I was lucky in the fact that I used to work 4 days a week, and there were four long days. So I got the 3 days off. And so I kind of figured in my head that I could possibly get 1 to 2 pages done a week.
Right.
Maybe three. And I sold that to John.
Right.
He believed me. And I did, you know, because when you've got John sending you an email asking you how things are going, and when your email pings and you're still a bus driver, but your email pings and you're looking at the email and it says it's from John Wagner. Alan Grant, a couple of exchanges with Alan Grant.
Yeah.
And it's surreal. And so it kind of gives you the boost you need, you know, whether you're tired or whether you think you haven't got the time to do it. When you get an email from John, how's it going? Mm. You just get your pens out and you start again.
I mean, but yeah. What is that sort of collaboration like? Because obviously you've got you've now started work with a big name. There's obviously the pressure of that, but also the backwards and forwards. Was it immediately like a fairly smooth process? I mean, obviously you're doing a second series, so it obviously went well. But what kind of learning curve was it for you?
I don't know. He's been like a mentor, effectively in the comic field. You know, not necessarily drawing, but when he sends a script to you, he's very open for you to interpret his work, his story. You know, he doesn't give you much of a description. You know, the description for Rock himself was he's big, red with horns. That's it. Nothing else. Okay. And he sent me a picture of Hellboy. He went similar to this, but not like this. And actually, that's quite hard. When someone says to you,
"Don't big, think of this elephant," horns,
the first character comes into your head is Hellboy. And then when you get a picture and they go like this, but not like this, you go, "Oh, how are you going to make a character big, red with horns, who doesn't look like Hellboy?" And people don't think you just ripped off Hellboy. But that was his description of that, and that's what he's like. So he's very easy to work for. Do I work for him? I work with him.
Yeah.
So he's been very helpful in, you know, "Oh, this may work better if you do it like this," or... But that happens very rarely, because I'm so good. No, it doesn't happen that often. I don't know. In fact, I don't know of any time I've done... Oh, God, I don't know how many pages I've done with John now. I've done 200-300 pages of whatever with John.
Yeah.
And he's never said to me, "No, that doesn't work. Change that." Not one page. He hasn't said to me, change that. Which is, which that's... Whether he's thinking it, that's a different matter.
Because the first series was a slightly different deal, wasn't it? Because you did that... you did it with BHP. Did they supply an editor as well, did they, or...?
I think Shah Nazir. He and John effectively were the editors on that.
Right.
John more so, I would say. So, you know, I a lot of the design of it was through Shah and Jim Campbell.
Yeah.
The look of the book.
Okay.
But I would say John's pretty much was the editor, you know, with Shah, but, you know, 80% John.
Yeah, yeah, and with the next one, you've kickstarted that, but you're going it alone on that one. So is it a slightly different feeling to that one? Is it, or because you paid by Kickstarter and now you're sort of, well, you're more than halfway through it now, is it?
Yeah, I'm on page 80.
Right,
two-thirds. Okay. Is that two-thirds of 120, give or take?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're doing it ourselves. So we've launched a company called Red Rock Comics.
Right. Okay.
And we'll probably only do the one comic with it, so it's not as like we've launched a company or anything. But unless John wants to do a third series, it's always better than three, isn't it? It
works. Oh, yeah.
Would it be the name of the third one? What should we influence you to call it? So you can't go really higher than God, can you, I suppose?
The funny thing is, I'm drawing some panels with, in the story Rock of the Reds, Ruby, Carl Dixon's landlady in the place he lives at, her guest house.
Yeah,
she's quite prominent with Rock in this in certain scenes, and I sent John an email just yesterday saying, "Am I sensing some sort of, you know?" They're going to hook up some sort of love story between these Ruby and Rock. Maybe a third series. I can't see John doing a romantic.
Something like Man About the House or something like that.
The vicar's come round to tea and Rock's got a...
It's like George and Mildred.
Change mid-transformation.
With an alien.
Yeah.
George and Mildred. Now there's a classic series. I think he could fit quite simply into that. I think that'd be fine.
He could do it. Comedy romance, I bet.
Yeah. I'd go triple XO on it straight away.
of course you would. Yeah. I mean, Rock of the Reds is very, you know, there's a lot of football or soccer, if that's what you call it, wherever you are. You know, did you follow football comics like Roy the Rovers and things like that when you were?
I'm gonna have to say no, I didn't.
It sort of falls slightly out of favour at that point, did it? I think maybe.
Yeah, we're talking. I started getting into 2008 in late 80s, 87.
Okay, still about. Roy was still about.
Still about, but when you get when you start off reading 2000 AD like that, you know, in those days when it's quite, I say, Slane was quite hardcore and and the stories were quite hard. To go from reading that and then going, when you're a teenage boy, this is, to go reading War of the Rovers, it normally happens the other way around, doesn't it?
You start off with War of the Rovers, then you go on to the harder stuff. Yeah, you've got the sort of cosmic head fuck that's Nemesis the Warlock or something. You can't go back to Billy's boots. Oh, look, he's lost his boots again.
Exactly. So, that's it, because I started off in 2000 AD. You don't really go... I went backwards. It would have gone backwards for me.
Yeah. I suppose the only place you would have seen it would have been in the newspapers, Stryker or something like that, I suppose.
I used to read the Stryker in the paper, but... I was never really a football fan. Although John did send me reference material for, good God, I've forgotten the name of it. It's quite a hardcore soccer strip in the 70s.
Hot Shot Hamish?
No. Oh, God. He sent me some reference with it.
What's that one about the family? What's that one they play football? Can't remember it now. We should know this because we had Barry Tomlinson on. He just talked about football comics, didn't he, for an hour with us?
Yeah.
It was quite a violent one. I remember this one being quite. He said because I got a few for reference. I got a lot of Roy the Rovers books.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because obviously drawing football panels, you've got to make it work. But you know, it's got to be able to. You've got to be able to read what the game's doing. Otherwise, it just won't work.
And the Roy the Rovers. I mean, I had my Roy the Rovers phase. I think around the early 90s was probably when it had one of its peaks.
That was his full-on mullet period, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like I remember, he was always hanging around with Gary Lineker. Gary Lineker was like the big stuff at the time, and like, and so you know, Gary Lineker would do like an article in the comic as well, and it was. I mean, obviously, I dare not think about the numbers it was selling. You know, in those days.
Barry loved the celebrity. He had George Boycott.
Yeah,
both all sorts of people. Yeah, you know, Brian Jacks he used to have. Yeah.
He tried to get him to write a column, didn't he? And like that bring like notoriety to the comic.
But
and it worked.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for that. But also the actual action, as you say, in the Roy the Rovers comics, it bears looking at, because to have this sort of sports action, but to make it look exciting in a comic book fashion, is quite a skill. It can look.
It's one of the hardest things.
We're always careful to show motion within a panel, aren't we? As a writer, I'm always careful of saying like the sword comes down and chops his head off, and because that's a difficult thing to do in a panel. But with football, you have to show the ball speeding in through the air and stuff like that. You've got
to do all that, but you've also got I've got to word this right without it coming across. So when I get the scripts from John, if there's lots of football action in it, I don't look forward to it as much as I do the space aliens and even the everyday stuff, you know, the street scenes or something like that. Pure, not because it's not good for the story or anything like that, purely because it's one of the hardest things to draw, because you've got to make each panel look different from the last.
Right,
and exciting, and all this lot, and like I said, in on the football pitch, unless you've got the stands in the background, it's just the background is just green grass.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you're trying to make every panel look different when you've only got a very plain background,
and especially if you have a scene, say like a player gets the ball in their half and they run the length of the pitch, say, and it's that's in four panels. How do you make essentially just one straight run continuously exciting?
Yeah.
Right. This is it. So it's, I find it harder to do than anything else because of trying to make it. Not that it's hard to draw the figures or anything like that. It's just to keep it looking exciting and interesting.
Fresh, yeah.
And, yeah, and each page fresh, exactly.
Because you can't even have, even the facial expressions, you can't have everyone gurning on every, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah.
That would be also, wouldn't it?
It has a space, a defined space, a football field. So the players have got to be in the right position. And if you start flicking around the camera, it's got to show those players in corresponding condition. Yeah.
Someone pointed out in one of the panels in Rock of the Reds, who was it? I can't remember. Reading Rock of the Reds, it was a very, very good storyline. I love the art, blah, blah, blah. Although in this panel, that character was offside. Really? I did check it, and I think I replied, it might have been on the forum again, 2008 forum. I did comment and say, oh, he wasn't offside because there was another character in the background, but you couldn't see him because he was off panel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did it include just the last line, get a life?
Yeah.
I like the fact that people like that in the world.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But I can imagine you'd have like a almost think of you as having like a little Sabutio kit in front of you to know where each player is as yourself.
Oh, God.
You know, it's hard.
It is hard because, like I said, you get people who are like that who will look for the mistakes in it. Mm. So you've got to do your best to, you know, make sure you don't do that because, like I say, with there's nothing to hide behind on those pages. The football pages, there's nothing to hide behind because there's no background. It's just green grass.
Whereas so, a spaceship or a laser beam, no one really has any real life reference to this.
Yeah, no one can say, oh, that's not right. That doesn't look right. Well, how do you know it doesn't exist?
Yeah, it's like comic fans complaining that sex with a lady looks wrong. There's no experience.
Well, I told you that comment I got on Vanguard years ago about that I named a ship. And because Vanguard's supposed to be so many years in the future, there's a certain cycle of naming ships. And apparently I'd used one out of sequence. Oh, and I was like...
You didn't.
I was like, oh my God.
I'll tell you what, I'm not reading it anymore. Dan. I didn't know that. I didn't read that.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in you.
They brought in an old ship. They recommissioned it because there was dire need or something. And I was like, oh, come on. What do you want me to say to that? You caught me. I am wrong.
Oh no, I've ruined the whole story. Forget it. I'm deleting it all now.
I'm pretty sure this the guy who found my offside panel, I'm sure he wanted my career to end at that point. One offside panel page, that's it.
He walks over to the massive chalkboard, puts another line down. Career's ended.
Get to listen to him. Yeah.
Tears up a photo of my face.
I mean, but as well as all the football, though, I mean, as we say, Rock of the Reds is a science fiction, action, comedy. It's got everything. And Rock the God initially looks like it's just going even further in that sort of direction. Now, Rock of the Reds itself, there's quite a lot of football. There's quite a lot of science fiction action. There's quite a lot of great stuff. But Rock the God, I mean, just by the name it's alone, it sort of steps away from that football club environment to become something else. So... it picks up directly after the first book, does it?
Give or take, I would say. You know, maybe starts off pre-season. after the whatever happened. Did we, in that single issue, I can't remember if we put in the storyline that they won the cup. Because the end page of Rock of the Reds was he went out to play in the cup final.
I can't remember now. I can't remember off the top of my head. I love the way that you ended that first volume. I've got to tell you, I think that was perfect.
Yeah. And it was going to, clearly, it was going to follow on, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
And John loves it. That's the good thing. When I talk to John about it, he gets so much fun out of because other things he does, you know, with Dread, there are boundaries. He probably, God knows if he does, but if he sends Matt, 2008 Matt Smith, an idea for a story. You know, what's the chance? I don't know. Matt might say, no, we can't have that because this is going to happen. You know, where's Rock? John can...
He's got what he likes.
Yeah. He's got free reign. He can do whatever he wants with it. And you can tell he's having fun with it.
Mm.
But it does start off, though, I would say a month or two after the last episode or the last page of Rock of the Reds.
And is it heading more in that science fiction zone, or is there still a sort of 50-50 split of football and madness?
I've not seen a finished part five scripts from John. John's right. finished part five, but he always goes through quite a few, not rewrites, but, you know, he tidies it up, changes a little thing here and there. And I think in the part five, he's decided to add more football because he probably was thinking there wasn't enough football in the first four parts. But I would say I think it's a much better story because Rock of the Reds was establishing everything. It was, you know, establishing the characters and the settings. And whereas Rock the God is more, like I say, John having fun with it now. He's got his teeth into it. He knows what's what, and he's just having a laugh with it. So, and the pages, I've just drawn some pages in the last week, and they're quite dark. And I've uploaded them into the files where, you know, John can view them. I don't know if he's viewed them yet, but I was going to send him an email saying, you don't think these pages are going to be a bit too dark for kids to read?
Right.
Not in a nasty way. They're just
no.
A bit,
no.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit. You know. Is someone going to play as I'm talking?
Dan Butcher's playing his acoustic guitar.
You know, alarm on my phone.
That would have sounded lovely if I carried on my story with guitar in the background.
It's like Jack and Ori. I think the thing what you're saying there, Dan, is I think 2000 AD did that, and that's why it's so successful, is because it didn't speak down to kids. It gave them something that was exciting and a little bit scary, and, you know, stuff like that.
Mm. Well, I think for kids, you know, I don't know if you... Oh, hold on, sort of close my blinds. I can see the whole world looking at me as I'm chatting to you. Bear with me one sec.
Okay.
There we go. So it's the only thing when you're sitting in the nude, isn't it? Everyone can see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you remember, pages you remember from when you were a kid you know, for me, there were standout pages of whether it's extreme violence or something like that, or, you know, you remember those books? Is it Ian Livingstone?
Yeah.
The Wizard of Firetop Mountain, all that sort of stuff. Is that
the gaming books.
Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone, didn't they?
I always remember certain books of them because of the really, you know, amazing cover, all the artwork throughout the book. And you get certain memories that you never forget, certain images. And I think the pages I've just done for kids, it would be those kind of pages because they're quite, they stand out from the rest of the book. You go through the book and it's very Rock of the Reds, but better. But then you get to this section of the story and it's like, well, it kind of stands out a bit from the rest of it.
Yeah,
and I think kids will latch onto it in a good way.
The benefit of the first volume is it was very, very older reader friendly as well. I loved it. I don't read football comics.
I loved it. Actually, it's one of those funny things when the trade was released.
Yeah,
I read it from start to finish for the first time.
Okay,
because when you work on it, you
got a bit of distance from it,
didn't you? Yeah. You don't read it as a whole. You read it in bits and read the same bits over and over again because you're doing the pages. But when the trade came out, I sat down and I read it from start to finish, and I thoroughly enjoyed it as well because I just thought it's just such a fun
romp.
It's one of those. But it's for me, it's going to be the same with Rock the God as well. It's like when I'm in my mid 40s now, and when you look back at films from the 80s, The Goonies, and it gives you that warm, fuzzy feeling. Hark back to those eras, and I think that's what Rock the God is. It's just a fun, enjoyable, just ride. You know,
There's a lot to be said for that as well. Like, you know, sometimes
the nostalgia feeling.
Yeah, people
is a
just
big
want to be entertained.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
that's it. Pure entertainment. It's just fun.
Yeah, I mean, comics. Comics can do anything, and there's a place for the messaging and the educational and all of this. But also, entertainment is the biggest part of it. You know, in some way, shape, or form, you have to be entertained by it. And I just love, you know, sometimes, well, actually, more often than not, I just want to be entertained. You know, something just big and fun, and sometimes stupid, rather than oh, I'm going to read from hell from start to finish.
It's a medium. It's just like different areas of it, and you can use different areas for different reasons, can't you? But yeah, you just need to be cheered up sometimes, and that's certainly what Rock did for me. Yeah, definitely.
That's what I mean. I like the idea. It's just it's a ride. It's just a fun journey,
There's a lot to be said for a comic as well that can transcend certain genres, because obviously there's the space stuff, but there's football. There's an awful lot of football, and there's probably a lot of comic book fans out there who don't like football or don't follow
football.
No, it's
a hard sell.
But as soon as people read it, they're in. They're on board, I think. I haven't heard anyone sort of say, well, I couldn't get into that. Quite the opposite.
No, yeah. that's a good thing. That's what I like about it, is the fact that there's quite a few people, when you've seen the reviews of it, whether it was in the trade format or the individual comic formats, any review, and I know you shouldn't really read reviews of your own work anyway, but every review I've seen... they've thoroughly enjoyed it, and
yeah, you can't help yourself, can you? I'd read one today. You can't help yourself, can you? I know you. They say, yeah, it's sitting there, just staring at you.
I remember I listened to one review of one of my works.
Yeah, all right, Matisse.
Yeah, and. They really went to town on it for whatever reason. Not just my artwork, but the story itself. And
right.
And the way they were bashing it, it was like we did it on purpose just to annoy them. And it's
right.
Like, it wasn't the case. You know, clearly, it was just they didn't like it. It's like, okay, you move on then, don't you? But they got quite vicious with their review of it. And I thought, Jesus, okay, calm down. It's just a comic.
Yeah, exactly.
You like it or you don't. And that's it, you know. Mm. We didn't do it to annoy you.
I do comics to annoy people, but I'm sure you did it. Yeah.
I mean, well, you're, to be honest, quite frankly, ignorant attitude towards the offside rule is very upsetting.
So what's the schedule now for the new book, Dan? Have you got sort of any ideas about releasing? And well, like I'm a pledger, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. I met John at MCM, I think almost 2 days before it ended.
Oh, right.
And he gave me one of those looks. I said, how's it going, John? And he gave me one of those sort of side looks. And I went, fuck off, you'll make it. You're John Wagner. You know what I mean?
Oh, he always had doubts. I don't think he knows how big a name he is. He puts, no. I think you're getting me confused with someone else. I said, no, John, you're a legend. And one of the biggest names in British comics, for God's sake. So if not the biggest name, you know, it's only a handful. But he doubted it from day one. He didn't think he would reach target. And I don't know why he thought that way. I don't know. But the publishing schedule for this one, it's in God's hands.
I suppose it is now, isn't it? Fucking
yeah,
hell.
Exactly. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm on target. Well, I say I'm on target. I'm probably about 2 or 3 weeks behind what I'd like to be.
In the comics world, that's you're ahead of target, my friend.
It's because of all this... Your brain's not fully focused because of what's going on.
Yeah.
Even though I normally don't go out anyway, but your brain's got your head's got to be in the right space, and I've been stuttering on pages, you know, going into it. Then I'm not quite there. Have a break, and this. In the last week or two, I've got back into it again, but. We don't know what printing schedule is going to be like because we don't know if the printers are going to be...
How it's going to get distributed or whatever, yeah.
Exactly, all of that. Yeah. No one knows, do they? No one knows.
I feel like...
Is this an OGN or is it 5 issues?
Both, isn't it? You're starting as a issues and then you're going to graphic novel?
It's going to be... It's just going to be a full-on 130, 40-page graphic novel.
Oh, is it? I didn't realise that because I bought the first issue off you.
What we were planning, well, John had two options. He said we either did a Kickstarter as single issues.
Yeah.
But he was concerned about that would be 6 separate Kickstarter,
campaigns, yeah.
Yes, 6 separate ones. Mm. And he wasn't up to that. And I don't blame him. Yeah. So he decided what we do is we do the full-on 140-page or 130-page graphic novel. If that doesn't reach target, then we'll start again, but do it as 6 individual. But it did hit target, so yeah, it's just going to be one-off graphic novel.
Oh, I can't wait to see that, man. I have to say,
it's going to be full size as well. It's going to be a full size. It's not going to. I know Rock of the Reds was a lot of people weren't happy with the
The trade was slightly smaller. I talked to Eamon about this when we were on Mega City. We had a chat about this, and it's slightly smaller. I didn't find it unusual at all. I'm fine with it, but shelf porn's a thing now, isn't it? Unless it's in a certain size,
yeah.
People worry about it, don't they? Yeah.
Well, that was
oh good. I can't wait to see it, man. Yeah.
And it was quite fun speaking to BHP through it. And when Shah said that this is the way they're going to, I wasn't happy at the time.
Right.
Because I was of the opinion, well, it was it should be reprinted as a trade in the same size it was printed as individual comics.
Yeah.
But Sean explained the reasons. There were thousands of pounds in difference.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. I'd love to see it as like a European hardback kind of album treatment. I think it'd work like that, because I've seen your real pages and they work at that size. Mm.
Yeah. Someone called it a handbag book. Oh,
oh my God! Did you twat him?
In terms of your original sort of pages and stuff, are you still do you do any digital, or is it all still pen and paper? And
it's all pen and paper. I tidied them up, or I can on Photoshop. It's easy to correct mistakes or change things that I need to change, or add. You can even add more. Because certain things I do, like adding a splatter to pages, paint splatter, ink splatter, whether it's white out or black, that can go wrong quite easily. So I've done lots of textures in Photoshop of paint splatter, and I add that digitally to the pages. So I can, if it goes wrong, well, it won't go wrong because it's doing it digitally. But 99% of it is all hand-drawn. On paper, because then I can make it's a second income, if you like. I can sell those pages if I need to.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you sold any of those pages yet?
Rock the God?
The Reds.
Rock the Reds.
Yeah, so I sold loads of pages. I've probably got about 30 pages left, 40 pages left.
The motorcycle gang villains in it? I forget their name. I'm blanking.
Yeah. I've got their name. Oh, God. Why have you done that?
Have you got any of those pages left?
Yeah, I've got actually the one page I liked, which was them on their bike. I've got it in front of me, the book, in fact. I can't remember what page it is.
Is that the splash page of them sort of riding on their...
Yeah, it's not quite a splash page, I don't think. It's...
And you've still got that? I thought that one would have gone.
I've still got that. I was surprised because I was quite chuffed with it as a page. It's not a splash page, it's just at the bottom with them sitting on the bike chair and the two corpses above them. And that's a page.
Right.
Yeah, I've still got that because there's quite a bit of white out on it. I didn't like that bit, so there's a lot of white out on it. So maybe that's why people haven't bought it.
I used to work with a guy who's a comic fan. There's not many of us about. We speak in like goaded language, but he got me to pick up some original pages off John McRae on a visit to MCM I was making, and I picked them up for him. And he came in my office to pick them up. And what I'd done is I'd photocopied them on the A3 photocopier, and I'd sellotape them to the wall when he came in. The photocopies, and he came in and he went, oh, what have you done? I said, oh, it's right, they'll come off easy. And like, I've ripped them off the wall. It's like, fucking hell, you're such a wanker.
Well, I was going to put on eBay all my thumbnail drawings.
Yeah.
I've got a pile, I don't get rid of any of them. I've got this, when you get the packs of photocopy paper.
Yeah,
I've got a board like that of thumbnails of Judge Dredd and Rock of the Reds and Judge Fear and anything I've done. I've got them in a big pile. I was just going to put them on eBay, starting a bit of zero or whatever, and just see where it went to. Because a lot of people were quite into that kind of. It's not original comic art, but it's.
I bought some of them off artists. Yeah. They're a nice little fiver or a tenner at a convention. They fit nicely in a sort of A4 folder and stuff. Yeah, I bought a few of them.
Yeah,
I've got some plain ones of those. Yeah,
I thought they might sell, and it takes them off my hands. But because in my head I'm thinking they might be worth something to somebody, so I can't rip them up and put them in the bin.
Man, you know what 2000 AD fans are like? They're fucking mental. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, in the nicest possible way. Yeah,
put them in and recycle, and I'll see them on eBay.
Yeah. Well, we had Shaky Kane on the show a couple of years ago, and he kept saying he was going to throw all his artwork out, and I was trying to get him to tell me where he lived so I could go watch his dustbins for a couple of days. Yeah. So let's move on to 2000 AD then. So whilst working on Rock, you got a call from Matt Smith, did you, to do some... Was it
Dread? No, that was another surreal moment, I'd have to say. Okay. It's been just each moment after each, is every single one's been surreal and a bit, you know, a bit odd. I was invited by John to go to the 2000 AD 40th Bash.
Oh, we're at that. That was good stuff, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. Nice. Yeah. What I saw of it. what's that? That's 2016, wasn't it? 2017?
17, I'm going to say.
17, yeah. I believe so.
Three years. So it's 3 years ago that they announced the 2000 AD TV series. Oh, well, never mind. Eh?
Oh, well, then.
Yeah.
They just timed these things, didn't they?
Yeah.
So he invited me out because you're going to go to it. And I goes, yeah, actually, I will. So I went online to buy the tickets and they'd sold out.
Right.
And I was like, bollocks. So I sent him an email saying, I would have done, but they've sold out. And he was like, leave it with me. great. And he goes, right, I've got your tickets. So I'll see you there. And I was like, oh, fantastic. That's good. We got up to the hotel. We stayed in a guest house or whatever we stayed in.
Yeah.
And then we got to the convention, me and my wife, Becky, and went up the stairs, and John's partner, Jenny, was going to meet us to give us the passes. And so we got the passes, and the guest list was phenomenal.
Good God.
And I was so chuffed that, A, I was meeting John again, and but I was going to go see all these other legends. And as I walked through the door, John's table was the first table you come to as you walk through the doors.
I remember. Yeah. And, sort of facing outwards, wasn't it? So that they could manage.
It's at the end of the line, wasn't it? At the end of the line, facing the doors as you come into to the room. And so I walked through, and he had a queue next to his desk. And he just clicked his fingers and said, sit down. next to him, he had a seat there. He clicked his finger and went, sit down. I was like, oh, okay. And he goes, sign these. And he just started passing me all these rocks. Because Rock had been there. I think it was issue 2 or 3 at that time. And he goes, just sign these. And we start sign. I didn't get off my table for the whole day. And as much as it was great, but I wanted to see all these other writers.
Yeah, as Carlos was there and Alan Grant and Pat Mills.
Yeah.
Well, you name it, yeah.
Simon Busy was up. I was sitting where it was John and myself at this gen table. Behind me, behind my right shoulder, was Carlos. Incredible. Yeah. And then next to him was Bisley. And, oh, Christ. It was just... But I didn't get to see... You know, I chatted to Simon Bisley briefly.
Right. But, man, I've got to tell you, I can see some Carlos in your work. I've said it before. I can definitely see the...
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's good to know.
Yeah.
I went for a meal with him as well. Him, John and Carlos.
Right.
On that night. He goes, are we going to go to this restaurant? He goes, Carlos is going to come. Is that okay? And the temptation goes, no. It's me on my own. But, I was like, of course. And then, you know, sitting in this restaurant opposite Carlos, I was like sitting dead opposite Carlos, and John was on my side with my wife. And it was just so bizarre. I'm sitting there looking at Carlos, and I'm just talking to him about his artwork. And we're not sharing a bit, that'd be weird. I'm just chatting there, and I was asking how he coloured his artwork, how did you get it? Because if you've ever seen Carlos's artwork in the flesh, it's so, you know, the printed page doesn't do it any kind of justice. The colours are so vibrant and amazing. And he was just telling me how, because I couldn't figure out what he was using. He used to use inks to colour it, you know, coloured inks. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, fair enough. And he's going, I'll send you an email. What's going on? This is the most bizarre thing ever. And I remember leaving and then getting very drunk. And then just sitting there with my wife saying, what has just fucking happened? Just sat at a table with Carlos and John, the guys who created Judge Dredd. And we just, you know, had a beer and a chat. It's just bizarre, isn't it? It's just crazy.
That was a hell of a day, that was. We had such a blast, guys, didn't we, at that?
Yeah.
It was brilliant that day, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's... I was sitting at the table. John had gone off to do a panel.
Right.
And Matt Smith came over to the table, and I'm sitting there because this is so embarrassing. You've got a few people waiting for John. I wasn't really known then at all. And I'm just sitting there twiddling my thumbs with a queue of people looking at me. Anyway, Matt comes over, Matt Smith, and he just says, John sent me over to see you. And I was like, right. He goes, he wants you to work 2000 AD. I've seen your work and you're definitely good enough. So are you up for that? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, how many pages can you do in a week? And I said,
10.
I said five. I said five, six. I went, oh yeah, 5 or 6. And Matt's eyes lit up. He just, yeah, oh, awesome. And he goes, okay, you're on it then. He goes, I'll get you a dread. I said, what? And he goes, yeah, I'll get you a dread. I was like, okay. Then he walked off, and I went, Matt. I goes, can I announce this on social media? He goes, yeah, if you like. And that was it.
How cool is that, man?
Yeah, incredible. Again, it's just, it's luck. You know, and it is luck. You know, John seeing my work in Dog Breath was luck, pure luck.
There's a certain amount of luck. I will slightly disagree with you, because there's luck in the fact that he's seen your work, but you've put the work in, you're a good person to work with, and therefore... He's passed the name on. You know, it's a recommendation. It's sort of the luck got you in the door. You did the rest of the work. That's the
I suppose. Yeah. I'm doing myself a disservice. Yeah.
what was the first story, Dan? What was the first story you worked on?
Oh, it was incredible. Again, it was Matt said, "Oh, John's, you're going to get a John Wagner dread," and I was like, "Fucking hell, really?" Yeah, it's a five-parter. So it's not even, you know, normally to get into, normally when you get your first gig at 2000, you do a future shop. Something like that. To get a five-part dread as your first your intro to working for 2000 AD, well, I've never heard of that. And the funny thing was, after I got the first five chapters done, the first five progs done, it went quiet from Matt.
Oh no.
And I thought, oh bollocks, really? So and in my head I'm going, I got that because John twisted his arm, or you know,
is it a bit of imposter syndrome possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I remember the date again in I think it was about October of whatever year it was, 2017. In October, Matt sent me an email saying, "Oh, here's a Judge Fear story." Oh, he goes, "Do you fancy drawing Judge Fear?" Oh, fucking hell, really? Of course I do. Yeah, of course. And then, in my head, that blew me away more than, funnily, doing the Judge Dread. Because I kind of thought I got Judge Dread off the back of John.
You're kind of on your own merits there. And in your head, and you shouldn't think that anyway, but in your head you'd probably be thinking that.
Yeah. And to get a Judge Fear story, it was...
But who wrote that, was it?
Kep W.
Okay, cool. He's a good guy, isn't he? Yeah, he's a cool guy.
And he wanted to do something else. And we still keep talking to each other, you know, messaging each other, saying, "No, we'll do something else again. He's got another great idea he'd like me to do." And I was actually looking at the artwork from that Judge Fear story, and it's, I like, you know, because it was monochrome, it's just black and white, it wasn't colored by anyone. It's just, so again, any mistakes would be made would be by me, not by, you know, nice colors being covering them up or anything like that. So that was quite cool. And when Matt said, "No, it's black and white," and I go, "Oh, can I add some screen tones to that?" And yeah, of course, you can do what you like as long as it's black and white. I really enjoyed that one.
Okay.
So do you see yourself, Rock the God is your focus at the moment, and rightfully so, and whatever rock there is going forward, you're going to have your hands on. But do yourself, would you like to see yourself being a 2000 AD sort of artist, or do you have some ideas of your own you'd like to develop one day?
I probably see myself, I think people see me as a dread or a rock artist. And that's pretty much predominantly what I do now, is just dread or rock.
Quite a good thing to have on your...
It's not bad.
I'm also doing the Roy the Rovers illustrations, actually. I'm doing for the fiction novels. Yeah, but I probably see myself. I don't, because if John wants to stop doing rock, that's it. You know, I can't write a story. I have story ideas. There's a difference between having an idea and being able to get it down on paper and being a writer. I'm not a writer, so you know, I could have an idea for a story. Like I had an idea for a Judge Dredd story, and I penned it and sent it as an email to John saying, "What do you think of this as a story?" And he kind of said, "Oh, that's not his kind of cup of tea. That's not really the area he would delve into." It's and he suggested the name. He goes, "Oh, maybe you should try this guy. That's more their cup of tea." And I was like, okay. Then I stupidly thought, maybe I can give it a go writing it myself. But I've not got the technical ability, I think, to write a story like that, you know, to make it work anyway. So I might pass.
With a bit more experience, you might surprise yourself, dude. I think, the comic art is a big part of the storytelling anyway. You know, you're communicating that anyway.
I'll tell you what, I have thought about doing a story with no words in it. You know, just a visual story. I thought about doing that, and then that's totally avoiding the having to write anything. You know, apart from the idea of the story, obviously, but you don't have to write speech and.
I enjoy wordless stories. There's a lot of them going about. We see them quite a lot here.
They're good, quite powerful.
Yeah.
I wanted to do one set in Judge Dredd's world, but in Alaska, Antarctic, or something like that. In when there's nothing in the background. I know they do a lot of cursed earth stories.
Yeah,
but one in and I had the idea of I've had a couple of ideas for stories actually, and one of these I said to John, and he said, "Oh, what kind of story would you like to draw?" So I sent him a whole, effectively a fucking script, he needed help. You know, here you go, John. I'll give you a star.
I've done you a favour, sweetheart.
Yeah. And it was only after I sent it, and I went, "What am I playing? What am I doing?" And he's then back. He goes, "I'll think about it." And that's it. And that was about 2 years ago.
That's John, though, isn't it? Yeah.
I think he thought about it and then binned it.
I mean, can you see yourself working for any of the American companies, for example, or any of the European companies? Is there anything there? You know, Marvel or DC or Boom or Image, is there anything there that you'd stretch yourself away from the 2000 AD? Because I know Rock is on its own, but people, it's kind of part of the same family in a way, isn't it? Because John's writing it, John and Alan.
I think it's when I was talking to Carlos at that 40th, and we were talking about working for the American publishers, and he didn't really want to. He didn't see his work suited them, and he didn't like. He said, "There's too much. You get told how to draw," and they kind of he didn't like the idea of that. I still think money talks. My dream was always to work for 2000 AD. That was my dream. But who would even turn down if you get an email saying we'd like you to do, and I'm jumping the gun obviously here, we'd like you to draw Batman and we're going to pay you, I don't know, $400 a page or $500 a page or whatever the case may be. It money talks, doesn't it? So it was never my aim, but
I can see you doing something in maybe the Black Hammer or the Hellboy universe or something like that.
I think
your style would be well suited for a BPRD story. I think that'd look great.
I actually read a lot of Image comics more than I do the big two, because they're more independent, aren't they? And they're
the stories
are more varied as well.
Yeah, but do you read BPRD? I think I can just see your style on that, man, all over that.
I don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, have a look at that. Yeah, no, really good. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what have you got coming up for 2000 AD? Much else at the moment, or?
Yeah, like I said at the start, I think I finished. A Dread story. I don't know. I don't know when these are going to be out because everyone's publishing schedules have gone out the window, haven't they?
Yeah.
But I finished a Dread story that will, you know, raise an eyebrow, I think.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I can't say too much, obviously, but
yeah. Keep your eye out for that.
Yeah. Yeah. When Dread gets married,
coming soon.
Yeah. When I drew it, and the Jim Boswell, who does all the... He's our new co-host, actually, on Rock of the Reds, Jim Boswell. Because Abby had a lot of work on, and it was hard for her to find a time in between.
Yeah.
And the other work, Abby Bulmer, and the work she was working, other work she was working on was proper comic art. She wasn't just colouring, so okay. I think that kind of understandably kind of took a priority. I think she'd done Sonic the Comic or something, some Sonic the Hedgehog stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, so we needed a new colourist, and I suggested Jim, because Jim's done a lot of work for my Judge Dredd work, and we worked very well together. And I suggested that to John, and John absolutely liked his work, so we took Jim on board. But anyway, this Dredd story, I sent it off to Jim. Oh, Jim asked me what I'm working on apart from The Rock, and I goes, well, I'm just finishing up this Dredd story. I goes, I'll send it off to Matt. He goes, chances are you'll get it to colour, because that Matt keeps sending my work to Jim to colour.
Yeah.
And I goes, oh, it's a bit bizarre, mate, just to let you know. And he sent back, he went, fuck me, yeah, that you're not wrong. That is that is going to raise a few eyebrows, that story. I can't think of one that's quite like it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah, nice.
Whether we just look at that as a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. We'll find out.
Who wrote that one?
Kenneth Nemade.
Okay.
So Nemade? Nemand?
Well, I'm sure the 2000 AD fans out there will know. So keep your eye out for that.
Yeah.
And obviously you're hard at work at Rock the God, which hopefully we'll see a release later in the year.
Can't wait, man.
But obviously I think John's
looking at, because we were originally going to go for July, I think, but he's pushed it back now to August.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
But like I said, we don't know what's going on because of the printers and what the situation with COVID-19 is going to be.
Yeah.
I remember when you dropped the black and white image of the sort of, the first image you dropped of it. It's rare these days I get so excited about the first teaser image of something, but that was outstanding, man.
Was that Rock on His Throne, the floating
throne?
That's the one. Yeah, I enjoyed that. John wanted to use that as one of the Kickstarter pledges, or not pledges, yeah, something like that. You go give away the original artwork, and I said, "Well, that's on two pages. That page, because a bit of it went wrong." I don't want to give away dodgy looking artwork. But the one that got me the most is the fact that we got Brian Bolland to do a cover, which is incredible, and we got Bisley to do a pinup.
Yeah,
which is Simon Bisley doing a pinup and seeing Brian Bolland drawing a character I designed. How crazy is that?
That's amazing. Yeah, and there's going to be so much more amazing stuff to come from you, I'm sure. Where can people find like more of your work? And I know Rock of the Reds is currently out and available in different forms. But what about have you got a website with more art?
Yeah, Dan Cornwell Art at Word, not at WordPress. It's Dan Cornwell Art. Yeah, it is at WordPress, isn't it? .com. And obviously on Facebook, I do a lot of, along with all the usual rubbish I put on there, but I always put on some artwork I'm working on Facebook, just Dan Cornwell. Twitter, Dan Cornwell Art on Twitter. Rock of the Reds has obviously got its own website, so rockoftheReds.com.
And if you're on Comic House, you can read Rock of the Reds on there.
Yeah,
and it's
in Comic Scene magazine at the moment.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah, it
is everywhere. And Dan has some piece of artwork that he may sell to you if you get in touch with him.
So. Yes,
please
do.
Yeah.
You do commissions as well, Dan? Do you take
commissions at the moment. It's because of one of the stretch goals was not stretch goals.
Pledges. Pledge levels. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Was sketches. So I've got to do 30 sketches or 40 sketches. And seeing as I know how long my sketches take, as anyone who's bought a sketch from me at Comic Cons, an hour and a half to 2 hours per sketch.
That's like a week's worth of work.
That's a week's work there.
Yeah. And it's easy being a writer, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah, and there we go. Just like that, the interview comes full circle. Thank you very much for joining us, Dan. This has been awesome.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, and we'll probably bump into you again at a show coming up.
Yeah, hopefully get you back on when it's all out and about. And That would be great.
Yeah, like I said, we're looking at August time. Hopefully everything's going to be back to normal then. Fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yes, so, go forth and check out the work, folks.
Cheers, guys.
And there you have it.
Pretty good. That was a good one.
Fantastic artist spoken to. a long time. Well, we wanted to get Dan on the show for quite some time. So
yeah, and he's listened before. It's quite cool.
Yeah. I mean, we do kind of. Normally we say sorry to people when they say, "Oh, I've listened." Why do we do that?
My natural reaction when I meet someone and their wife is staring at me as well, because when a mate of mine said, "I listened to your podcast," for them, my wife said there's loads of swearing in it because I was playing it in the garden. I wasn't allowed to. I was quite proud of that moment.
Yeah, it's nice. Apologies to anyone that does listen to us. Out loud in the garden. Maybe, you know, when you were in the office, maybe you listened to it at work. We've been told many times that people have had to sort of either turn it down or put their headphones in.
I would never listen to this on fucking loud. It'd always be in the earphones.
I don't listen to it loud when I'm on my own.
Yeah.
You actually listened back to the show, do you?
On the odd occasion where I know I've been brilliant, you know.
Oh, well, every week. Well,
everyone then.
There you go.
Yes.
There's a lot of love in this room.
Yes.
Which reminds me, Tony, you've got to clean up. Anyway. Yep. it's like a llama's been in here. Oh, the outtake you will never, ever hear. Anyway, from that brilliant interview and lots of comic talk to some shout outs. We've got a couple of shout outs on the show. Who wants to go first, Tony?
Just a little shout out to 11 O'Clock Comics. Thanks, guys, for the lovely review of Atomic Hercules, where they totally got it, and I made them chuckle, which did amuse me. And they were very interested in seeing more into my character Noodles, who, if you've read the comic, you'll know why he's called that.
That was a great little review. I love listening to that. I was beaming with pride.
Me too, man. So I got up because I knew it was coming out. I knew they were talking about it. And I was like, I woke up at like 5 a.m. to see if it had come out. Oh, my God, it's downloading. So I ran upstairs to listen to it. It's weird because I've listened to those guys for like, I don't know, 10, 12 years or something, you know. And when the second they reviewed the Hall Chronicles really kindly, and they reviewed this very kindly as well. And they all three of them pledged to it, which is really nice of them, because I'd have just sent it to them for free, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? But since then, we've had quite a few orders today, which has been really nice. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
See, reviews, good reviews sell comics.
Yeah. Not just like, oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get a good review by making a good comic.
Yeah, you do. And you'll hear about a couple of good comics in a minute. We also want to put a big shout out to last week's guest, Jason McNamara,
who became
a firm favourite with a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, got a load of good feedback about him. Yeah, loads of good stuff.
He's already become one of the fam, and he's also quoting us
on the back of the book.
On the back of Nocturnal Commissions, there is. I mean, it's a really thought provoking pull quote.
Yeah.
I think you can say a lot with few words, can't you? I think.
Yeah.
What was it we said again?
Fucking hell.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Fucking hell. He also updated the Kickstarter like updates and said I was on this podcast, and he mentioned it and spoke about it, and that's fantastic. That's how a writer or a creative should act. Loads of people do that kind of stuff, but he seemed to go the extra mile.
What are you doing? It's a little bit of he's American, we're an English podcast, a little bit of an opener market, you know. You come on here, talk about it, you know. Don't block people.
Let's not get into that. It's all positivity. But yes, if you haven't listened to last week's show 248, please go back and listen to it, because it's hilarious.
Speaking of which, I've just had a message from Dan Cornwall saying, mate, that was brilliant, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that's what we hope all of our guests think after they've been on the show. I'd like to think we're pleasant to talk to.
You know,
as I said it.
Tony
made a mild reference to like something happened on social media, but like I feel like these people kind of like running these Twitter blogs for big companies. Like, you got to kind of not be so fucking, like, you're talking to people who want to go buying and reading your material.
Yeah.
And if you start blocking them and treating them like shit, why would they carry on reading what you put out?
Yeah, people take it personally, don't they? Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's an element of, you need to say, act professionally. Yeah.
I mean, there's the personality, and then there's the product. And they're two very different things. If you're lucky enough to have a personality that gets more eyes on a product, then fucking go for your life. But when you do that, it becomes a different ball game, doesn't it?
Yeah. When you become professional about something, it switches.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And it's like when you see, I mean, we've all like probably watched YouTube videos or whatever, and to start with, they're just straight off and they're being casual, and then they get a sponsor. As soon as they do those sponsorship ads, they're proper professional, and they sometimes you're like, oh, I've got to get through a sponsorship ad. But the sponsors are important to a lot of these people, so as soon as they get that sort of thing, they have to be professional with it.
Yeah. So,
but like, say something to you. Had a meal in a restaurant and said, I wasn't too mad on that. I thought the steak was overdone. You'd say, oh, okay, fair enough. We'll try and sort that out next time. You don't ban them from the restaurant.
Yeah. It's a great analogy. That's, I wonder if we're going to go there with that. Quality. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Good. But yeah, thank you to everyone.
Just the other thing quickly, man, is because you follow people doesn't mean you agree with everyone. I don't agree with.
Yeah.
There's probably 99.9% of the world I don't agree with it around everything.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Simply because I follow someone, I probably because I like the movies they make or the art they make or something.
We don't have to agree. We don't have to like the same stuff. Just don't be a dick.
That's simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Problem with the block lists are, say if I follow an artist, I think they're a great artist.
The blockchain.
And then the downtime. Yeah. They're making some political comments that someone else doesn't like. And then when someone sees that, oh, look, he likes Joe Bloggs, let's block him right into the chain. So I only fucking was looking at his bloody artwork. I don't know what politics are.
Yeah.
I know. But these are people who are trying to sell products. So
I know.
Pete Sametti talks about this, doesn't he? And often I agree with Pete, and he's a past guest in the pal of ours. But he says, look, if you're putting these blockchains, you're just limiting the amount of eyes on the comic. And we're trying to survive in a difficult time these days.
They took that wrong. They said you can't. He was saying you can't block people on Twitter, and that's not what he was saying. He's saying you can't. Don't use blockchains where people just pass around big lists of names that you should block without any second consideration or any looking into it.
I mean, I've blocked loads of people, but it's not. I'm not a comic book company trying to sell loads of comics to people.
I've certainly
never used a blockchain, not because I wouldn't know how to use it, but you know.
Say in our awesome comics group, we had a list of whiz pass around, I'll block all these people. I wouldn't use that list because I don't know. If someone annoys you, that person might not annoy me, and I can't take your word for it that person's.
Yeah, we wouldn't allow that to be posted, to be fair.
No,
we wouldn't promote that.
Our community and the little community around this show, we love you all, and everyone just loves comics. That's what we're here for. And that's what we're here every week for, and we're here to shout out all the people that are making great comics. No matter who you are, whatever comics you're making, you know, if you love comics, we'll love you. Simple as that.
I'll love you a lot.
And then I'll probably have to send you emails of apology.
As a shout out, we've got our comics group. We did the portraits this week post up, and we've got the was that last week? I'm fucking losing it with this fucking lockdown shit. But we're running another competition for the 20th, and that's the Azzurro tribute. So get your pens and pencils out.
Oh, Christ, I need to do that. Yes, the asterisks and obliques and dogmatics.
I just tried drawing.
When are we running that for?
For the 20th.
That's what, isn't it? Yes, yeah, 13th as this goes out. Yes, you've got a week. Yeah.
I tried drawing it and ended up drawing in the style, and I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And then I tried something else, and that wasn't working. So I'm really struggling on this one.
Yeah.
He's almost a difficult character to draw because it's we see it as shorthand for an image, but he's got it down so well, hasn't he? Or the eyes, all the eyes.
I think with those, you know, and you have that sort of, because you have that shorthand in your brain of like asterisks and obelisks and stuff. As soon as you see someone doing maybe a realistic version of them, or you know, a manga style version of them, some people's brains might look at it and go, well, that's not right. And that's not what this sort of art thread's about. Do these characters, if you want to do them like asterisks, do it. If you want to do it in your own style, do it. But yeah, that is up until the 20th.
20th. We're all going to post our stuff up on the 20th. So I'd love to see what you can come up with.
Yeah, definitely. And
that's on our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk, which we'll put another shout out at the end.
And another quick reminder about the Awesome Comics group. We're not doing Kickstarters. We've said this before in notes. No Kickstarters on there. So we'll just delete.
We don't even put our own Kickstarters on there, guys. Yeah. So we can always tell if you're a listener, because or you, if you're not a listener, because you try and post Kickstarters on then, the amount of times we've said it, look, it's for talking about stuff. If you want to ask advice about what to do when you launch a Kickstarter, then I think that's good. Fine. That's a good discussion to be had. But not like, oh, here's an advert for my comic. Mm. Come on, guys. Yeah, yeah. Or people should get told off.
To be fair, most of the people listening to this, you're not a culprit, so we're kind of preaching to the perverted.
Yeah, yeah.
Perverted? Did you just say perverted instead of converted? Yes.
My mate worked on that film. My mate worked on preaching to the perverted. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, okay. No, I heard of it, but I didn't watch it.
It was all filmed around Vauxhall, and all the extras they used were people from the clubs and stuff, and he was saying it got a bit dark. Some of the filming was a bit strange.
Yeah. Speaking of strange...
But that's a story for another time.
God, I'd love to see. I think we should get Dan Butcher to do a like
do trailers,
or like get him to do like a narration of a Conan story or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll just do like a nice 2-minute trailer. The time before
it was a time of war. It was a time of heroes. That sort of thing.
Yeah, we're just gonna do that now. Now.
Oh, that was that was fucking sexy, Dan. Do that again.
That one guy
do it again. Go on, do it again.
Oh, now.
Yeah, there's that one guy who does all the really fucking creepy shit horror films from the 70s and 80s, isn't there? There's just one guy, really weird shit. I like that guy's voice, just I think, right, I'm in this film, I'm watching this one.
I posted that picture of that geezer who pops up in Big Trouble in Little China. I can't remember the guy's name now. He's like in Die Hard, he's the guy that eats the chocolate bar while waiting for the SWAT team to come in. He's fucking great. And whenever you see him in a film, it's like, I'm having a good time.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. VHS originally. Yeah, he's that sort of guy.
And it's time to still have a good time because we're going to recommend some comics to you lovely people. So who wants to go first, gents?
You go, V. Go on.
All right, then. I picked up... This is one I picked up at True Believers. We mentioned it earlier in the show, in the interview. And I got a couple of issues of this. I remember showing it to Dan when I was back at the table. This is by Sam Rhodes, is the writer. And he's also the letterer. And Ben Matsuya is the artist. This is Cryo Wolf. Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of it. I've read it. Sent me a picture of it or something.
It was a couple of Kickstarter campaigns, but as always, you always miss these Kickstarters. And I've picked up a couple of books from Sam in the past. He did Silicon Heart. Do you remember that one? And also Christo, I think.
Okay.
I talked about it on the show. Yeah. But Cryo Wolf itself, as it says on the website, is a gender flipped retelling of Beowulf. Set on a long abandoned space station, which immediately it's basically Vikings in space. It's the Beowulf story in space. It's set in a it's hard to say apart from it's fucking awesome. I'm just really good at it. Sam is very good at it. Has that sort of oldie worldy sort of Viking speak, you know. It's not modern. It's not someone trying to take the sort of language and just basically do like an everyday modern version of it. You know, the language is very poetic, and that, you know, Shakespearean Nordic kind of way of talking. It took me a couple of pages to get into the rhythm of that. Do you know what I mean? Have you ever read those sort of books when they're talking that sort of oldie speak, and you're like, right, I need to get my mind into it? And I thought, am I going to be able to get into this? And then within a couple of pages, it's like subtitled films where you're very aware to begin with, and then your brain just adjusts. And I think in part that's down to A, the great writing. You get into the sort of, if you know the Beowulf story, I think most people do.
Yeah. Mm. It was very popular as a sort of subject for a while, wasn't it? A lot of people were doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this probably benefits from the fact that there's been a bit of a break from that. And I know there's those sort of, let's take this classical story and put it in a science fiction background. Let's put it on in the future, or on like an alien planet or things like that. But this really, really works because of the melding of the two. You know, those sort of... Because everyone on the space station, they're not wearing overalls and things like that. They still look like sort of Viking sort of people. It's that sort of community and language. But, you know, there's airlocks and there's the huge ships and things like that. And it's beautifully visualised by Ben Matsuya. I must say, the colours alone are fantastic, and they really set a mood. And I mean, I've got issues 1 and 2, and obviously with the Beowulf story. We know it builds up to Grendel, the monster, kicking off. You know, normally people, they get to that story quite quickly just so we can get to the hero. Does that make sense? Because everyone wants to see Beowulf. Two issues down, and I guess Cryo Wolf, who I'm guessing is the heroine of the tale, has yet to be seen yet. It's a lot of setting up, and I tell you what, this is I think one of the nicest things I could say about it is it feels like a European book. It's got that sort of quality sort of narrative based on character. You know, there's wonderful pacing, and there's definitely some signs of horror, because when you see Grendel, it's sort of like a mutated sort of, it's a Grendel that I haven't really sort of seen before. For those who don't know, Grendel is like this huge sort of monster, isn't it? That I can't remember. Is it the son of? It's a monster, isn't it? Yeah, a monster for later in the tale. Yeah, a monster. For later
I remember taking my son when he was very young to see the sort of animated live action-y thing they did.
Yeah, which is pretty fucking dark.
Well, we had to leave because he got a bit frightened.
Yeah, because that is pretty. Yeah, because they don't fuck about with it in that story. I quite like that film, partly because it's Ray Winston as Beowulf. You've got to love that. But this I just think a sexy beast.
I love Ray Winston. That'll
change
it. He's not a cliche of himself at all, is he? No.
Well, he wasn't then. Love you, Ray. If you want to come on the show anytime, you're welcome. But this is great. And I know, like, when you hear gender flipped retelling, some people may roll, you know, they may roll their eyes or something like that. But it does genuinely work for this. It wasn't something that it's not just straight in your face to begin with. This is what we're doing with it. And because of the nature of the tale, it works. It really is. Really does work, because it's basically that. All of the main protagonists are female, and the world is a matriarchy sort of thing, and that's just where the world. There's no sort of underlying political statement. I think it really works with this kind of, especially with those sort of older sort of the Viking communities and stuff. It plays into that really well. But if you don't know the story, it's loosely based, obviously, because it's set in space, so you don't have to have read the book or seen the film or anything like that. But I think if you basically, as soon as you open the book, you'll probably be on board for it. It's beautifully told. Like I say, by the end of issue two, you know the good and the bad, and there's sort of political machinations of, you know, you've got these two young children who basically, by the end of the second issue, they're the ones that have to go off and find the hero that will fight the Grendel. And there's tribal communities and, you know, there's something for everyone. If you liked Game of Thrones and that sort of, you know, when people were sniping at each other, it was the things that they weren't saying, or they were saying the right kind of stuff. That sort of language is going on in there as well. I mean, it's dark. They've got it in the book. I think it's for ages 12 up. Yeah, they've suggested for readers 12 plus, which I think is fine. I think, you know, it's like a PG-13 sort of book. Okay. My only slight criticism, it's not really well, yeah, of it is, I don't think that the covers are strong enough. I mean, the book inside is so strong,
right?
And I thought, you know, would I be able to get into it? And then just two issues in the space of like half an hour or whatever, you know, I realised, fuck, I want more of this. Where's the third issue now? Which I think they're working on. But the covers, they're not punchy enough. They feel almost like a panel of the book. Which is saying a lot, because it's a beautiful work in the book. But you know how there's the cover should always be a little bit different from what's going on inside. Does that make sense?
Okay.
But yeah, I would definitely heartily recommend Cry Wolf. Sam's just a supremely nice guy. Very softly spoken. When you see his table at conventions, it's very simple. He's just got his book. You know, he's one of those. He's a writer. He's got his books in front of him. As simple as that. But he knows what he's doing. He knows how to write a good book, and Cryo Wolf is definitely an example of that. You can see examples of the artwork if you go to samrhodes.co.uk. There's a page for Cryo Wolf on there, and you just see some nice sort of landscape sort of images. What's going on there? I mean, I missed out on the Kickstarter. Hopefully there'll be another one later in the year for issue 3. When did issue 2 come out? Actually, let's have a look. Yeah, I think the 2018 was issue two. So, I was talking to Sam. He said they're planning to do the next one. I think they might be doing three and four back to back. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the hero of the book. Does that make sense? You know, there's a real build up to it. So yeah, Cryo Wolf is mine. Roll on the next one. Who wants to go next?
Go on, D-Man.
I don't want to go. Yeah, I go next. I picked up Murder Falcon. So fucking late to the party.
Right.
Has everyone else read this and just not me?
Very much so. Yeah.
It was one of my favourite books of last year, without a shadow of a doubt.
I said the C-bomb after a few pages in, because Danny Warren Johnson has this ability to draw hyperkinetic action, and I was really, I wouldn't say jealous, but along that road.
You can say it if you want, Dan.
Yeah, I was very envious. I was just fucking hell. Because it's fucking awesome. Yeah, his art style alone is absolutely awesome. I mean, just what he gets into the pages, but this character, emotion, settings, he's just the complete package. I wasn't really too sure about what the story was going to be about, to be honest. I'd only read the blurb and got it off other people's recommendations, and it's quite a heartfelt sort of story.
That's the thing, it's heavy metal and giant monsters, and somehow he manages to break your heart. And
His writing chops have really come on. He writes it as well off the top of my head, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah.
His writing chops, I have to say, he's really grown into it. I only want to see him writing his stuff now, I think. I've got to that point where he's that sort of artist, you know?
Yeah, he's got the whole thing.
Yeah.
When fucking the Murder Falcon's flying up in the air and using the miniguns, shoulder mounted miniguns to battle 10 story monsters, and then it shifts to sort of the main characters sort of friends and extended family, and these are emotional problems getting over them. And bring them all together, and you got the Nordic metaler with the black and white face paint.
Oh, so good.
So good. It's hard it's very hard to kind of for me to talk about this book, but I really enjoyed it, and it's a complete story. It's got 1 to 8 issues in it, beginning, middle, and end. Job done. It's really good.
Yeah, there's a definite end. It's a definite a lot of people will go for the giant monsters and people having avatar, these crazy over the top avatars fighting them, heavy metal music, and it'll get you in a way that you won't expect.
And is it just a normal trade, or is it a hardback, or is it?
I'd just go a normal softback trade.
Oh, I'd love to see an oversized.
I'm sure they will at some point of that, especially since it's a one and done.
Do you know what the nice thing about him is? He started in webcomics. He got a bit of a name. He came on our show, and he was the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
I've met him, three or four times now. I always meet him in New York and buy that little ash can off him. And he's very sort of self-effacing. And then he came over the no-brow table and had a lovely chat at Thought Bubble. And it's nice to see him getting such recognition.
Is he writing the Wonder Woman book?
I can't remember if he's writing it as well.
Because what's it called? Wonder Woman, what's the name of it? God.
I haven't bought it. I looked through it and it looks... I'm not a big Wonder Woman fan, but I looked through it and it looks nuts. And
that's an oversized one. Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. They've done a proper job on that as well, haven't they?
It's like the question. They did the question the same, didn't they? And that Batman Frank Miller thing is sort of slightly oversized, aren't they? Yeah, magazine size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is... I think Daniel Warren Johnson is... If an artist is just starting out today, he's their, Chris Bocciello, the artist that when people see them and go, oh my God, I want to do this, I want to draw like that. He's that kind of artist.
I mean, good on him. He could charge a few quid for his commissions now as well, which I'm not, it's nice to see.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm coming out of him early on. Commissions. Poof, ridiculous. And he plays mean guitar as well. So, top recommendation, Dan. Very good
stuff.
Yeah, lovely, great work.
Yeah, and finish it off with another great, Tony.
Well, mine's a bit of an old book, actually, because I don't have the ability to go in comic shops and spend money that makes me feel guilty. I've bought a few things online that have been delivered in recent days. I bought some Toth hardcovers, and I bought a book that I hadn't read since, I'm going to say 1990 or something like that, which is Hard Boiled. Did you guys ever read this?
Jeff Darrow. I've read it fucking loads of times.
I read it a long time ago. Yeah, but it's one of the classics, isn't it? Yeah,
it really is. So it's right Frank Miller, artist Jeff Darrow, colorist Dave Stewart, letterer John Workman, logo design Steve Miller. Came out for Dark Horse. It's some one of those oversized cloth edged hardbacks. Okay. Anyone who's seen Dalston Monsters, it's a bit like the books we produce.
Oh,
it's
yeah, yeah.
Cloth edge to it with its, it's not quite, it's like a longer, thinner, sort of taller than a magazine kind of size. The reason I bought it, actually, I'll be honest, is because I'm a cheapskate. It was 18% off. It was $13.99.
That's a fucking bargain.
That's you pay more than that for a fucking reprint of a Marvel comic from 1973, yeah. You know. My name's Nixon. I'm a tax collector. When what is reality? I've put as my first note in this because there's no fucking working it out. I'll read you the bit off the back for those who haven't read it. I'm sure that people will have done, but some of you might not have. Carl Seltz is a suburban insurance investigator, a loving husband and a devoted father. Nixon is a berserk homicidal tax inspector racking up mind-bogglingly body counts in a diseased urban slaughterhouse. Unit 4 is the ultimate killing robot machine and the last hope of the future's enslaved mechanical servants. And they're all the same person. So it's this fucked up world. The world is just so intricately
horrible.
Drawn. Nothing is in shadow. Everything is fully on show and is just like fucking transgressively disgusting and violent and sexual and hard boiled, I suppose. Mm. I'm actually not sure how this would fly if it came out today.
Yeah, me.
Some people would have a problem with it.
Real juxtaposition between him. He's like a kind of 1950s house husband going out to earn the bacon, and the world around him is just degeneracy incarnate.
He's like, oh darling, I'm just off to work, and he goes into these double page spreads where there's like people of all sexual persuasions having sex openly. You know, there's hobos, drug addicts. Everyone's got a piercing. You know, everyone that Darrow draws on the page is just like individual. So I wrote down a few things that just will probably give you a taste of what it's like. So children with syringes, gravestones without names, surgery tanks where he's operated on, orgy markets. You can go into a market and they're selling orgies you can buy. Bodies ripped totally open with gunfire, exposing either human insides or robot parts or whatever it's going to be. The eeriness of the suburban excerpts of it is just strange, but when you get into the sort of urban rather than suburban, when you get into the urban environment, it's just a fucking mess. I mean, this, you gotta realize this is what, 4 years, 3 years before, well, no, more than that, I think it was about 6 years before The Matrix and stuff like that. It's got a little bit of The Matrix, it's got a little bit of Blade Runner, but it's a grindhouse sci-fi just crazy book with manga-tinged, crowded cityscapes, I'm going to say. Some of the cityscapes are very Akira-esque in a way. Even the traffic jams, you're taking your life in your hands, getting stuck in a traffic jam.
He sort of takes a kind of shortcut, like darts across the line, and it wipes out fucking like 2,000 cars.
Yeah.
Like when he's rear view, they all explode.
That he causes through just pushing through traffic. His car is a Ford Eastwood. There's also, you're like, it's a Ford Stallone in it, which is one of the cars. But it's sort of dirty, and there's always cups and cigarette butts and just shit all over the car. But it's also got like a button you can press, and little spiked wheels come out to burst the tires of the police car that's chasing him and stuff like that.
Okay. I can remember, it's quite a bleak tale. In the end, like, he gets set up to maybe like save him, be a savior, and he fails.
Yeah, he does. He gets set up to be a savior of the new race of beings that are coming out, and he knocks the head off the woman. Who's trying to sort of sexy robot? When he pulls the head off, it is not in that way. He knocks the head off the woman of this robot, who sort of tries to say to him, you know, you're the one. And I'd actually forgotten the complete ending. I'm going to leave saying it because it's a strange ending. It's very Twin Peaksian.
Okay.
Recent series of Twin Peaks. There was like three or four characters that came out of Agent Cooper that sort of live in this landscape, and it's a bit like this. Is different elements of different things, and he's always shouting his name. He's always shouting different names at people. There's just a sense of just a fucked up reality. You don't know what is real, what is not, whether it's meant to be real or whether it's not meant to be real. There's an image of him floating in a tank at one point. You think, is this the reality that comes from that? And I think I like the people that play with it. He ends up playing chicken with this supercar because he's in this sort of old school steampunky almost car, like a, it looks like a sort of car from the 50s, you know, like sort of car. And he plays chicken with this granny. Is it this like murderous granny robot? It just looks like a granny with a kid under her arm. And then they play chicken with each other, and it causes that's the one that causes this huge mushroom cloud. And the gunfights they could not be more bloody. You'll be hard pressed to see more flesh being ripped off a body by gunfire than you would in Hard Boiled. I made a note, page 58 to 59 is a street scene that is probably the most detailed street scene. So you've got whores, cyborgs, grungy, dirty future tech, nudity, all kinds of fucking going on around. It's a sort of hot street corner in a sort of hot, maybe LA or somewhere like that. And every single character in that, which of which there are hundreds, is individual and got something going on. My name is Burns. I'm an insurance investigator. He just says all different things throughout it.
But
it's not like, I know you spoke about Darrow and how Shaolin Cowboy is just a series of fights. It's a series of
well, one issue blood. Was a particularly sort of
running through killing people, wasn't he? And from a narrative point of view, that isn't great. You look visually with Darrow, you can't fault. I think this has got more to it than that. I think with the addition of Miller, who, let's face it, was in the late 80s, early 90s, Miller was in his crazy prime. You know, it was just like, it was like an ideas machine of just nuts stuff. And I think there's that. And I think you get that technology versus human flesh element to it. You get reality versus programming. There's not commercialism and consumerism. It's kind of before the internet came out, so it's not quite all screens and everything. It's all cyborg additions to bodies and stuff like that. And it's a commentary on the living experience in a city in the summer in an American city at the time. In a way, there must have been a lot of cocaine. I'm saying there's a lot of cocaine.
If I can remember rightly, his kids are like the handlers of him, and like basically his wife sleeps him to kind of keep him just like sedated. And they tell her what to do and give him drugs.
A really strange moment where he's in bed and he's just woken up from a terrible dream, which is, well, you don't know which is the reality or it isn't the reality, or he's been fixed and been put back into the sort of suburban setting to keep him in line. And he wakes up and he's freaking out a bit, and his kids are going, "Oh, Daddy, what's up? That was a big shout. What was that all about?" And then to calm him down, his wife has sex with him. And then it flicks to the kids, and the kids are like preparing a syringe to put him, going, "Oh, we need to do this to him to calm him down."
Yeah,
and it's like bizarre, like strange, and the dog talking to each other, and it's very bizarre, and it ends on a weirdly homely note where he turns up back at home. You think, oh, what? You know, because he gets utterly destroyed at least three times.
I'd have to reread it because like he's like, I always say, what's the word for this guy? Because there's virtually nothing left of him, and then the next bit that he's all been put back together, and he's doing the same shit again. It's crazy.
There's allusions to other things that are going on in comics at the time as well. There's a sort of fist fight between him and the granny, which is so reflective of the fist, like the intricately choreographed fist fights you see in Daredevil. You know, but done with the same amount of panels that you saw in Dark Knight on the page and stuff like that. There's a moment where he gets thrown out of an explosion and he's flying as a sort of fiery trail through the sky as if he can fly. And there's a kid sort of waving her hand up at him as if she's sort of telekinetically controlling him. It's an absolute fucking head fuck. But every panel, there's more art in every a number of panels than this you see in whole comics these days. Yeah, genuinely. There's a moment where there's this sort of shadowy character, this robot has killed the scientist, Maya, the human scientist that she's with. And she's sort of, you can hear her shook. She's sort of breaking his body up to flush it down the toilet. And one of the other scientists is sort of talking to her while there's blood all sprayed all over the floor in this sort of public bathroom while he's urinating next to her. It's just bizarre. But it's beautiful. It's dirty and dangerously beautiful, and I'm so glad I got the hardback. I had the magazine because they were sort of slightly smaller than magazine size. Are those the ones you got, Dan?
Yes.
The issues. Yeah. And I remember the sort of picking them up. I didn't have a pull list for them or anything at the time. I'm just sort of picking them up, going, "There's another one of this crazy comic come out. What the fuck is this? Seems to just be going on forever." But yeah, it's well worth it. It's out of Dark Horse, and like I say, if you go on Amazon, it's only $13.99 for a lovely full sized hardback. That's like three comics these days.
Yeah.
So get hold of that.
There you go. Nice. It's another week done and dusted.
Yep, loads of fantastic comics for you all to check out, read, and enjoy. We hope you enjoyed this week's show. It was an awful lot of fun putting it together, and we hope you're having fun listening to us waffle on every week. No matter what.
Week.
Yeah, next week is the big 250. Yeah, 250. We've got some interesting plans. Some things are going to happen during the show, so just stay tuned. 250 already. Can you believe it? Bloody hell. Where did the time go?
I can't. I don't know.
Just think of all the good we could have been doing in the world.
How many hours is that putting back to back?
Don't think about it.
To be fair, it has kept us off the streets, which I think is...
It's true. Yeah.
Big tick.
Yeah. Actually, it's been a service.
My arse, thank you.
Your arse.
Yeah.
Well, in
got
so
right
many...
pummeling otherwise, wouldn't it? You know what I mean?
That joke I told you on Facebook. You like that one, Tony?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
You see that one, Vince?
Did I? Or did I not?
I said, after all the shit that went on between them two, I can't believe they're back together.
Oh, yes, I saw that, and that made me laugh. Yeah, and what two was that, Dan?
My arse cheeks. It's a good gag.
Yeah, it's a good gag, and you always come out with that, some absolute blinders. Yes, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, folks, on the run up to 250. Let us know what you thought, or if there's anything you want to hear us talk about on the next show. We'll probably answer some questions as well. Probably.
Yes.
So you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any Atomic Hercules letters, send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and you could be in the next issue. God help you. And you can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be retweeting, posting, and doing all kinds. You've got the keys again now. Oh, I need to sort out the passwords, don't I?
Yes.
Oh, admin. You know what I'm saying, people. But if you do Facebook, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. This group we constantly talk about, because it's full of amazing people and fantastic comics talk, is on Facebook, and it is Awesome Comics Talk. Search for it, join up. There's a couple of questions, and say you listen to the show and you like comics, and we'll love you forever. We'll be your best friend.
We've had loads of weird people apply and not answer any questions, thinking that they're just going to get through. I'm going to say they're probably none of them were comic fans, so I've knocked about five people back this week.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, because we just want comics fans, because that's what we are.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on lots of other networks, then thanks for that. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about more great comics and more great artists, writers, and whoever's making comics, because we love you all. And if you listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Dinosaurs Ball Bag.
Then was that your gladiator name?
Yeah.
I thought so. Well, I thought I recognised it from somewhere. Yeah. There was you and Wolf.
I didn't realize you meant that gladiators.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. That time me and Jet ended up stuck in that lift that time. That was funny.
Not for her. Where can people find us?
Getting hot in here.
Online, etc. Tony.
NeverOnAnything.blogspot.com. Come on, can I have some submissions for the Honest Review Month? I've had like three. So there's that. NeverOnAnything. BigCartel.com is where you can buy them, and I'm on Twitter SOSEZOHYZ.
Yes, and you should check out his show NeverWritingAnything.podbean.com.
Yeah, but had a right laugh on. It's different from here. It's a bit of a deep dive. I got a few comments about the one I did with Mr. Cannon, where people said, "I've never heard of anyone you talked about there." Well, there it's an education for you, my friend.
Yes, there you go.
So there's going to be some interesting shows coming up as well.
I'm recording tomorrow with Dave Robertson. I'm looking forward to that.
And where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice. And the cover, mate, that new cover looks great.
Yes.
Awesome.
Power in a cover. Good stuff, man.
The general public have yet to see that. So.
Oh, are they? Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
We are lucky, and you'll understand why we're gushing about it when you see it fairly soon.
Yeah.
So, and you can find me on social media, Twitter and Instagram, @JesterDiablo, where I'll be posting up. Who knows? I could just be waffling on, but, you know, there's quite a bit going on at the moment, so you never know what I'll be saying. So thank you for listening. As always, we love you. Go forth, stay safe, stay healthy, read loads of comics. We hope you're all doing well and staying sane. If things are getting on top of you, just go to your bookshelf, pick your favorite
comics. That's what I'm doing.
And if you want to be creative, just do some artwork, write a comic, do whatever. Comics are here for us, and that's why we love them. So enjoy next week if you can. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. And what do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome, yeah.
Dan, your heart's not in that one, is it?
Tony got in so quick.
Right, I want you to do your video trailer voice for Stay Awesome. Go on, say it.
Stay awesome.
Oh yes. I need a moment alone. Bye everyone.
Bye. See ya.
One about bestiality this week is my favourite one. Have you got to that one yet?
No, I haven't got to that one yet.
Bama Llama or Wank Off Bama Polecat? Llama.
Bama Llama, they were really good in the 80s. Oh, no, that's Bananarama.
They're fucking nasty bastards.
What, Bananarama?
Trying to Bama Llama.
They always look quite loving, quite cuddly, don't they?
Yeah. It'd be pretty hard to get purchased, wouldn't it, though? Because, like, you...
Take your belt off. Like,
I'd suggest removing your trousers before you enter the field. If otherwise you drop them, and you're kind of doing that awkward waddle over the field towards the llama.
Avoid llama shit everywhere.
Yeah.
The awkward waddle over to a llama. Is it an unsuspecting llama?
Come here, llama. I'm gonna fuck you up the arse.
Come here, you bastard.
And if you got a stalk on while you're
trying to bump this llama, all the llamas are running towards you. Me.
This isn't how it was supposed to end.
I can't manage two llamas tonight, just one. Stop spitting in my face.
With that sort of like. Don't know what the llama would make.
Anyway, nice. Yeah.
Anyway, from llama bumming to. I can't put any of that as an outtake. I can't. No. I'd love to, but it's just too much.